Hello, everyone. It's Scott Tips, and it is Wednesday. It's January 30th, 2013, and I didn't really know if I would be here or not, and where is here? Here is beautiful Santa Monica, California. The skies are clear. It's bright, sunny, although a bit chilly, with a bit of a chill to it, and I'm here for a reason because, and I didn't think that I would be able to do this show today, but I did have a good turn of events because my mother had gone in for open heart surgery. That was my hesitancy in knowing last week whether or not I would be on the show or not, because if things took a turn for the worse, then of course I would not feel like doing a program. But as it turned out, things took a turn for the better, and she had her operation very successfully last night. I was with her in the hospital all night long, and I got my requisite hour and a half of sleep, and so here I am in time for the show. So bear with me. This will not be with a guest tonight. This will be just sort of bits and pieces to discuss, and I hope you enjoy it. And if you have any suggestions for topics as we go along, I will try to look at the TNS radio chat line, but I may not be looking at it as closely as normally when I have a guest. So let's get on with the show. I don't often go to hospitals. I usually am visiting others. The only time I'd ever been in a hospital for myself, actually, was when I had a hernia operation once many years ago. And I, of course, having done that, I was mindful of the Woody Allen movie, Sleeper. I don't know how many of you have seen Sleeper, which is one of the older Woody Allen films from, I guess, the 70s, actually. But he tells the doctors as he comes out of his anesthetic-induced sleep 200 years in the future, he says, I knew it was too good to be true. I found a parking spot in front of the hospital. And then it goes on from there. So I had this flashback to this film of it was too good to be true, and I'd end up 200 years in the future, which is probably a good thing to do because right now we're faced with a future that's not that great. And but it is what we make it to be, and I think we can alter this reality that we're faced with. I don't think these people who are doing these bad things to us, whether it's politically, socially, culturally, nutritionally, medically, I don't think they're as powerful as we all think. There are ways to get around them. There are ways to do things to improve our health, to improve our wealth, and so on. And one of my favorite persons to do that is Catherine Austin Fitz. And I think about 6 months ago, I promised all of you I would try or maybe even get her as a guest on the show. And I can because she's a good friend of us, National Health Federation. She's helped us a lot. And she's really a very solid thinker. For those of you who don't know Catherine Austin Fitz, she was one of the undersecretaries in the Department of Housing in the United States government under Bush 1. And she is the woman who pointed out the fraud, the rampant fraud that was going on at the time. And for her troubles and her attempts to correct things, she was basically kicked out the door. They even, who knows who, but we can guess, tried to poison her. She was poisoned, but she wasn't killed, fortunately. And now she runs a financial news and sort of general lifestyle news service called the Solari Reports, S-O-L-A-R-I Reports. And I get those because I was a speaker on her program, and she was kind enough to gift me the ability to go and hear other speakers and to be on our mailing list. But I highly, highly recommend that you go and at least look her up. Again, it's Solari, S-O-L-A-R-I, report. You can Google it, and I think you will I think you will enjoy it. I will get her on the program. But just as an aside, she, in her year-end wrap-up for 2012, she, let me just read from this thing. I think this is pertinent. "It's always frustrating to me," she wrote, "during the presidential elections to see that so many people still think it makes a difference. And they don't understand it's almost, quote, do you want Mr. Global in a green suit or in a blue suit?" Close quote. "The entertainment was just unbelievable," referring to the U.S. elections. "I do believe that essentially Obama got the nod at the Grove, and it was Mr. Global who picked him. Romney refused Condoleezza Rice, and frankly, Obama, as someone with African lineage, is a much better face for global genocide. If you look at what the American war machine is doing globally, Obama is a much more effective face to front that machinery than Romney. I think one of the things that happened that really did Romney in was he refused Condoleezza Rice as a running mate. Good for him, but I think that did him in. Mr. Global wanted a better face for marketing global genocide and war. The second thing was the Democrats offer greater control at home." Now, those of you who know me know how utterly opposed I am to control. I think control comes from oneself. It doesn't really, except in certain circumstances such as crime, it doesn't need to be and should not be imposed from above. Coercion, in my book, doesn't really work. What really works is self-responsibility, self-control. And when you have controls imposed from above, and again, this is me talking, not Catherine Austin Fitz, when you have controls imposed from above, it really causes the individual to abdicate personal responsibility. They start looking to the higher power, and I don't mean God. They start looking to the higher power, the government bureaucrat, or maybe even the politician, to tell them what to do, how to think, what to eat, how to dress, how long to live. And to my mind, this is not only an incredibly inefficient way to organize a society, it's an immoral way. There's no morality in it. They try to, you know, fashion it, clothe it in a sanctimonious, well, we care about people more than you attitude. And they try to push this on people and make you feel guilty if you don't acquiesce to the coercion that causes you to have to turn over all your money to them, or certainly a high percentage of your money to them, and that's with a capital T, so they can spend it the way they think is best, because of course you are too stupid in their eyes to know how to wisely spend your money, but they, in their infinite wisdom, know very well how to spend your money and how to run your life, because you're one of the stupid, great unwashed in their view. So control, in my mind, goes hand in glove with this elitist attitude, this very socialistic attitude that's anti-free market. And it goes hand in glove with crony capitalism, which to my mind is nothing more than just a souped up fascism put in a nice tuxedo, but basically a throwback to the 1920s and 1930s. And we know what horrible things came from that as well. But then fascism and socialism, if you can envision the problem, and still me talking here, the problem with the political spectrum that's just left-right is that it really doesn't depict how close the far right is to the far left. It's better to imagine the political spectrum as a circle, and at the top is liberty, and at the bottom is tyranny. And then you can see you've taken that left right and you've turned it into a circle. And the far left, communists essentially, are every bit as tyrannical as the Nazis on the far, far right. And actually, the Nazis were really nothing more than National Socialists, so maybe they really truly belong on the far left anyway. But regardless, the bottom of that circle are the control freaks that want to tell you what to do, what to think, how to act, how to dress, how long to live, all of the above. And if you like that sort of thing, if you enjoy being told what to do and not having to think and taking your brain out and parking it by the door and just watching the global media propaganda machine at work through your television set, then be my guest. You really shouldn't be listening to this program, because that is all exactly the complete antipathy of what I believe, and hopefully what you believe. But the problem is that in this life, there are plenty of instances where you will be inundated with propaganda. I already mentioned television. It's radio, it's the print media, it's your friends, it's your family, all who know better than you, and all who all too willingly accept control and coercive control as the answer for any problem. But all it does is beget further problems, necessitating further controls until you have total control. Then what are we? We're nothing but little cogs in a big tyrannical machine. So continuing with what Catherine Austin Fitz had written at the end of last year, and just to bridge that little gap there where I interrupted her, the second thing was that the Democrats, with a capital D, and the American Democrats offer greater control at home. And by the way, I think the Democrats are the most corrupt political party on the planet. I might be wrong, but if they aren't the most corrupt, they're probably fairly close. They're excellent, excellent at propagandizing that the Republicans are corrupt and evil and just about rich people. And there is actually plenty of that in the Republican Party. But the fact of the matter is the Republicans are heads and shoulders better than the Democrats, because at least they try to, the junior and freshman members of that party, try to leave some modicum of freedom for Americans and the like. They do have some other problems, which I want to address here. But if you look, as Catherine Austin Fitz again writes, if you look at what needs to happen to the U.S. federal budget and the reengineering of retirement benefits and Medicaid and Medicare, invasive control is the order of the day if you're going to cut people's financial benefits. So the Democrats are pushing climate change and control. They're pushing invasive healthcare controls. They're now pushing gun control. They're implementing Basel III, tough on the banks. Yeah, right. The rollout of the Dodd-Frank bill. We now have a new integration plan from the Housing and Urban Development Department, which is an operational nightmare. It's the most Soviet thing you've ever seen, and it's up on Catherine Austin Fitz's blog. The Democrats are pushing controls, controls, controls. The Democrats in California now have a supermajority, and that's important for turning the U.S. economy, because California is the 800-pound gorilla in the U.S. economy. So you now have Democrats in the White House. Everything is going to be done to make it look like Obama has a mandate, which he does not. In fact, it was funny to see Senator Shelby, U.S. Senator Shelby, steaming out of the negotiations on the fiscal cliff the other day, saying, you know, quote, the president won his election, but so did I, close quote. It was kind of funny. She continues writing, part of the push for control is going to be extension of financial regulations globally. So the IRS is going to keep going global. We're going to see more war against Switzerland in 2013 and 2014. If you have global accounts, you want to make sure you're not just in Switzerland, if at all possible. Time announces that Obama was man of the year. That's Mr. Global trying to make his mandate look much bigger than it is. And she continues, my favorite quote after Sandy Hook was what one subscriber wrote to me. A friend had posted this on Facebook, open quote. Been going to the local gun shop for years. I've never seen it busy as it was today. This was on December 20th. There must have been 70 people inside at two different times. They told me the president is their employee of the year. All of the reports of gun sales were off the charts. Part of going clean or coming clean is getting a critical mass of people to look through the puppets and into the real controllers. And this is important to all of you, my listeners, because let me repeat it even. Part of coming clean, and what she means by that is getting our house in order, is getting a critical mass of people to look through the puppets and into the real controllers. That is, to see the world for what it really is. Now, I'm probably preaching to the choir on that, but it's absolutely critical that we do that. And Catherine Austin Fitz says it very well. This is a situation where we need to convince as many people as possible that what they see in the mass media is really wrong. It's absolute propaganda. When I was in the hospital at various times waiting for my mother's operation, when I was in the cafeteria, they had big screens of CNN News, you know, the Clinton News Network, as it used to be called during the Clinton years. Now it's just called the Communist News Network because of its obvious bias. And one example of it is how they're trying to manipulate this so-called Sandy Hook massacre into a situation where they can take away the guns of ordinary law-abiding citizens. And you even see this in the way, like, USA Today, the newspaper, characterizes the debate. They call it not gun control. That sounds too negative and too pejorative. They say rather that it's gun safety. So you'll start seeing more of that. Oh, it's all about gun safety. Yeah. Well, there was a poignant cartoon that I saw, just a one-panel cartoon that showed a guy dead on a street and two robbers who've just shot him are pulling out his wallet and saying, hey, here's the $100 he got from the gun buyback program. This is great. And, you know, that pretty much characterizes it, because you take away the guns from the citizens, and who's going to be the law-abiding citizens? Who's going to be left? It's going to be the criminals and the government. Oh, wait, I repeated myself, because actually, aren't they really one and the same? We have a really criminal government in the U.S. In fact, you can pretty much pick any country in the world, and I can say that about it. We have criminal governments in control, and I've said this before. It's the Ed Griffin analogy. You know, we have this big, nice cruise ship that the music is great, the food is wonderful, the people on the ship are nice. You interact with them, and at the end of the day, you get to go back to your cabin, and there's a nice bed there and nice appointments to the room, and the ship's headed to the port that you want to go to, that you signed on for, and it cruises on into the night, and somewhere along the line, a pirate ship comes. It sort of pulls up alongside in the middle of the night, and the pirates with their AK-47s clamber aboard. They go directly up to the bridge, and they kill the captain, the first officer, the engineers. They kill the crew, basically, and don their uniforms and take over the ship. And then slowly but surely, they turn the wheel so that the ship's headed in the complete opposite direction to your intended destination. And, but what about the passengers? Do they notice anything? No. You know, the crew is still wearing a uniform and they look the same. You know, they talk the same. They still say, aye, aye, captain, and the like. And they, the food's still good. The music's still playing. The beds are just as comfortable. And that's what we find in countries throughout the world, whether it's Britain, Ireland, the U.S., Canada, whatever. Our governments have been hijacked by criminal elements. They've just donned the uniforms of the old crew, and they pretend that they are legitimate crew members of this ship and that they are going forward to the destination that we intend for them. But they know in their blackest of black hearts that they aren't headed there, and they've turned the ship around. Another friend, a friend of mine, not Ed Griffin, but another one whom I saw recently, he analogized it more to the Titanic, that the band is still playing, the ship is sinking, but you know, some of the passengers notice it's sinking because they're at the bottom, the poor people and so on. And they, of course, are trying to escape. But some of those in the upper deck, say, let's call them the middle class and the upper class, maybe they don't notice or take it as seriously. And that's sort of what he analogized our current situation to be in most of the world. And I think we'll see more and more problems, because you can't just keep inflating the currency. The U.S. government cannot keep running its printing presses 24/7 without there being serious consequences. It just does not work. And it is a recipe for disaster. And sooner or later, all the chickens will come home to roost and we'll have to pay for it. Right now, the U.S. government has enjoyed the luxury of being the reserve currency of the world. So it's for decades been able to export its inflation to the rest of the world, to Russia, to China, to the EU, to Africa, to India, you name it, Australia and the like. We've been able to export it, and all the rest of the world pays the price in the depreciating currency that goes there while the U.S. government presses just keep on running. Instead of having a sound currency where prices would stay reasonably stable, we see that since the creation of the Federal Reserve Board in 1913, that private corporation that runs our economy, essentially, in the U.S., that the dollar is depreciated by 96%. That is, what was once worth a dollar in 1913 is worth about 4 cents, maybe even 2 cents now, since we've moved along since that last statistic that I saw. So we're looking at an out of control government that's lawless, and it's put on a little happy face in the form of Obama. And if there's anyone listening to this program who thinks that Obama is a good person and is trying to do things right, well, you can dissuade yourself of that notion. He's a puppet. He's doing a lot of evil things. And if it's one thing I've noticed about U.S. presidents, each one that comes after the previous one is worse. Bush 1 was worse than Reagan. Clinton was worse than Bush 1. Bush 2 was worse than Clinton. And Obama's worse than any of those people as well. And I predict that the next president, who will, of course, not be honestly elected, in fact, elections in the U.S. are a joke now, and have been for a very long time, the next president will not be any better than Obama. He'll actually, or she, will make Obama look good, if that's even possible. I don't think it's possible, but then I didn't think it was possible when Clinton was president. I couldn't imagine anyone worse than him, and Bush proved me wrong, and Obama proved me wrong. So there you go. Just don't buy into the propaganda, because it will mislead you. It will probably cost you your life if you believe the sort of dominant paradigm that they fish out to you, throw out to you every day through the media. So what else do we have? Someone mentions Piers Morgan, that exported Brit to the U.S. And he is such a joke. Most Americans do not like him. They can't stand him. All he does is blather on the air and is really an embarrassment to Great Britain. And one of our listener states, I wonder, does he support the idea of UK citizens having guns at home? And no, he doesn't. To my knowledge, he does not. And one of the saddest things I've ever seen about the UK is that perfectly law-abiding people, citizens protecting themselves in their homes, whatever happened to the concept of a man's home is his castle, defending themselves against criminal elements, breaking in with intent to kill. I'm not talking about just to steal a little trinket off a shelf, but intent to kill. These people, when they should be lawfully using their guns to defend themselves, are branded criminals and actually are treated worse than the breaking and entering criminal himself. So this is a huge embarrassment to the UK. I wouldn't move to the UK just for that reason alone. I mean, who can defend themselves in that sort of environment? You're supposed to call the police, the bobby who's going to show up and defend you in time before your robbed, killed, or raped? Yeah, I doubt it. If it's anything like the U.S., the response time is ridiculous. We had the example recently in Detroit, or was it Wisconsin? Maybe it was Wisconsin, where the sheriff there was urging citizens to buy guns to defend themselves because, as he put it, we just can't arrive in time and we need you to do that. So, as you might imagine, and I discussed this at a previous program or during a previous program, but I'm a huge fan of the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which basically enshrines the Second Amendment right. That's sort of redundant, enshrines the right each individual to carry arms. And as I said in that previous program, and I'll repeat here, it wasn't just so people could go hunting. It was a doomsday device. If all else failed, the right to free speech, the right to free exercise of religion, the right to be free from search and seizures, unreasonable searches and seizures, if all the protections, the parliamentary, the electoral protections, all of that failed, then the citizens who are armed could defend themselves against a very tyrannical government. So that's the essence of the Second Amendment. It's a doomsday provision, and every country should have one. And I point again to the example of Switzerland, where every able-bodied male is required to have a gun, actually, and has one in his home. And you don't have criminal elements there as you do in countries that are unarmed, and you have people who can defend themselves. So anyway, enough of that. How many of you switching? Well, maybe we're about at the half hour. I want to take a little bit of a break. I got an hour and a half's worth of sleep in the last 24 hours, or let me see, the last 30 hours. And so I'm going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back. So stay tuned. It'll be about 6 minutes and I'll be back on. Okay. Hello, everyone. We're back, and let's switch gears and talk about something else for a change. You're probably, let's say, hoping I will, maybe, no, who knows. But how many of you know that toxic melamine has been released from bowls serving hot soup? There was a study that was done, and you may remember that the National Health Federation first broached this topic at the Codex meetings about how dangerous the man-made chemical melamine is, and argued against it at multiple Codex meetings, and actually won a victory in terms of infant formulas, where there was going to be an exemption to allow melamine from packaging to migrate into the food with a sort of sky's the limit exemption. And we got that totally defeated last year. Anyway, it turns out that melamine, which is toxic, has killed infants and cats and dogs, and several scandals from foods coming from China. When you have hot food in contact with these melamine plates, you know, these are the plates that look kind of plasticky, but they're more solid than plastic. You can throw them on the floor, they don't break. You can drop them on the floor, they don't break. You can hit your life partner over the head with it and it doesn't break. Basically, they're very practical products, but I don't use them because I always thought something could leach, the melamine could leach from them and cause all sorts of kidney and other problems that are quite toxic, that could actually kill people. So this study shows that if you go to the National Health Federation Facebook page, you can see the actual study itself. And maybe what I'll do is I'll post it on the chat line for those of you who want to go to it directly. And you can see what it says for yourself. But I would urge you all to avoid melamine tableware and see what you want to do. So, but what I would suggest you do is to avoid anything like that that's artificial. So that's a huge problem, and that is something that also leads me to tell you about the mercury in the vaccines. We all know that's an issue. If anyone doesn't, then They've been living under a rock for quite a period of time. But the thing that you may not know is that mercury-laden vaccines have been exempted from the Mercury Treaty. You know, the American Academy of Pediatrics won this fight that it had been waging to keep mercury in vaccines that are exported around the globe. There was a 1999 decision, you know, to remove mercury from pediatric vaccinations. This was in the ban on Tamiflu and a draft treaty on mercury. And this organization went crazy about it because they want to keep mercury in vaccines. Well, you know, you don't want to inject mercury into an infant or even into an adult, in my opinion. It's toxic enough. This is a highly toxic substance, and admittedly so by most governments in the world. But these morons at the American Academy of Pediatrics want to push it on the rest of the world. They've already been doing it with mercury and dental amalgam fillings. And for those of you who still have amalgam fillings, you should, through a proper biological dentist, you should have those removed, not all at once, but a few at a time so that you don't get overwhelmed. And then, of course, you take, I would consult with either the biological dentist will know, or you have a nutritionist who will tell you, or just Google it online and see about what you need to take, things such as cilantro and other detoxicants that will detoxify your system and get the mercury that's in there out of your body and out of your system, because it is affecting people. You can see this a lot with, even the mercury that gets emitted from these new so-called environmentally friendly light bulbs. Those are such an incredible joke, as we all know. But the saddest thing is that mercury-laden vaccines have been exempted from this treaty. So I will send you another link. I guess I don't send it to you. I will put it on the chat line. And again, for those of you listening or on the chat line, you can read more about it at this particular website. So I recommend that you do that. Another little thing, I was in Las Vegas last week and listened to a very interesting seminar given by Bill Sardi. And Bill Sardi, as you know, has been a guest on this program, and I almost had him on today, as a matter of fact, but I will have him on later. In any event, he said an interesting thing about cholesterol and many other interesting things in this seminar, which was basically about how to protect yourself from prescription drugs. That for every prescription drug that's out there, there's a natural product that will do that will solve the problem better than the actual prescription drug will, and without the side effects. So it's very important that you try to find the natural alternative to this prescription drug. And in fact, there's a book out there called The Drug Muggers that helps you do that. It's really almost like an index in a way. It's called Drug Muggers: Which Medications Are Robbing Your Body of Essential Nutrients and Natural Ways to Restore Them. It's by Susie Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, and Susie is S-U-Z-Y, and I recommend that you do that. We reviewed it in the most recent issue of Health Freedom News, which, if you're a member of the National Health Federation, you will get a copy of that, and it gives you what nutrients you need to protect yourselves from prescription medications that you may be taking, as well as natural alternatives to that. So this is something that's very important. But one of the things that Bill Sardi said at his seminar that really stuck with me is the importance of keeping your cholesterol levels up, not down. You know, some of the people, as he put it, would come up to him very proudly, "Oh, my cholesterol level is 110. as if that's some great feat. Well, it turns out that if your cholesterol level is 160 or less, your risk of dying goes up 49%. Your risk of dying goes up 49%. That doesn't sound like a great goal to me to achieve. That is to lower your cholesterol just merely to have an increased risk of dying. My cholesterol, I don't know, it's somewhere above 200. But remember, it used to be the danger level used to be 250. And then the drug companies realized they could sell their deadly statin drugs more amply by lowering the level to 200. So then doctors were told, look, tell your patients that 200 is the new level beyond which it's a danger, and they need to get their cholesterol levels below it. But what happens is if you lower your cholesterol levels too much, you lose your sex life, you lose your, you increase your risk of stroke and your ability to think, ability to resist Alzheimer's and the like. It's amazing. The list is actually incredibly long. So if your cholesterol level is 160 or less, you need to rethink your diet. You need to rethink how you're treating your body, because about 80% of the cholesterol in your system, by the way, is produced in your body. Only 20% comes from your diet. So you might be putting in the wrong components to your body that allow your system to make adequate cholesterol, but it's super important. Cholesterol, you know, is the substance that coats, along with hyaluronic acid, the myelin sheathing that is essentially the power, you know, is the same as power lines between the nervous system cells. So you want to keep that well lined. Otherwise, you'll end up with Parkinson's or multiple sclerosis or other problems. So this is definitely something to be avoided. That is low cholesterol. Too low cholesterol, you're more likely to die. Then there was another news item that was really very interesting. And this was, if I remember correctly, it was an interesting news item about green tea and Viagra. And it said, basically, the cancer-fighting properties of green tea and erectile dysfunction meds. Ever wonder why men who drink green tea and have Viagra prescriptions live so long? Well, no, I didn't. Of course you didn't. Nobody wonders that. But according to a new study led by Kyosho University's Hirofumi Takibana, it could be true. He gave mice suffering from cancer a cocktail of green tea and PDE5 inhibitors. Let's say parenthetically, the kind of drug in Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, and other brands of ED medication, close paren, finding that malignant cells stopped growing when subjects took the healthy arousing mixture. Evidently, the EGCG catechin found in green tea has long been thought to have cancer-fighting properties. We all know that. You drink green tea, women, and you reduce your risk of breast cancer. But the problem was that there's this enzyme called PDE5 that kind of stifles the cancer-fighting properties of green tea. Well, hey, what do we do? This guy discovered that we already have a drug that suppresses PDE5, and it just happens to be used for erectile dysfunction. So you combine them, and you have a super effective anti-cancer remedy. This is something that I'm sure some people will jump on, and no pun intended, and it will probably be met with much delight. But it is interesting, because who would have ever thought that that would be the case? The other thing, and I invite all of you to go to our and like the National Health Federation Facebook page, because we have a lot of very useful tidbits on health and nutrition there. And one of them, just for example, is an interesting article about using actually small red beans, wild blueberries, red kidney beans, pinto beans, cultivated blueberries, cranberries, cooked artichoke hearts, blackberries, prunes, and raspberries, and the list goes on, for their antioxidant properties, even though those antioxidant properties have diminished over the years. Certainly they're less sort of rich in antioxidants than during the time that our grandparents existed and ate a diet of those. And for example, an apple that's sold today has one-fifth the nutrient value of the apple, the same kind of apple that our grandparents would eat. It's really a shame. That's how deficient our diet has become, even for those who eat a healthy diet, that don't go to the quick burger or the fast food places to get their meals. It's really, really very sad, because it's also very misleading. You think you're eating a good diet, but you really aren't getting the same nutrition that your grandparents had. That's why, for example, fertility rates in men and women have gone down so much. We aren't getting enough nutrition to actually even reproduce ourselves. So that's why we're seeing, unless you're Italian, and that's why we're seeing all these, the decline. So a word to the wise, try to eat organic when you can, because usually the plants are grown, the food is grown with better nutrient fertilizers, better soil and the like, and you can't get something bad out of bad, you can't get something good out of bad soil. At least it's very hard to, unless they're mushrooms, perhaps. And then I want to tell you about Deepak Das. I don't know how many of you have stayed current with the Deepak Das case, but that's a case I'm involved in. And this is a case that involves a researcher in resveratrol. And you may recall that I've mentioned several times the resveratrol product called Longevinex, Longevinex. I'm a huge fan of it. It's probably the best resveratrol product out on the market. You have to get it through the internet. They can't make many claims about it, but I have to say, if I were limited to only five supplements that I could take, Longevinex would be one of them, and I strongly recommend it for men, and I recommend it for women who are, menopausal, postmenopausal, and it's been shown to extend lifespan. Certainly turns the genetic switches into more youthful states. I saw the study myself that was conducted by the University of Wisconsin at Madison researchers there. It's an incredibly effective product. But what happened is this gentleman, a research scientist named Deepak Das, was accused of research fraud by the University of Connecticut, and he was dismissed. This time last year, I was in, I had just returned from India, and this East Indian researcher, Dr. Das, was then brought up on charges to get him dismissed from the University of Connecticut, from his tenured position there. And we fought it. We fought it in, I think it was about five separate hearings in Connecticut. Ultimately, we lost because it was essentially a kangaroo court, and it was not a fair, trial, not at all. And so what happened is the inevitable, round of appeals fell on very deaf ears, because the analogy I gave for him trying to challenge this, the argument that they made was he had manipulated these Western blot images, he had committed fraud, and he should be dismissed for that. Well, my analogy to that is, hey, it's like you get a parking ticket for parking in the red zone, and you go to court and try to challenge it. But what happens? You go there, you have witnesses ready to testify that say your car wasn't parked in the red zone. You even have photographs, time linked photographs and dated photographs that show that your car wasn't there. But when you get before the judge says, I'm sorry, the ticket was written and I will not allow any of your evidence, none of it. The photos, the witnesses, forget it. They're out of here. Instead, we're just all we will discuss and all you can attack is the police officer's ticket. Did he date it correctly? Did he sign his name there where it's supposed to be signed? Is it in black ink as opposed to purple ink? Yeah, you can talk about that, but you can't debate. You can't argue whether or not you were parked there. Forget it. And that's what happened to Doss. It's the red zone parking scenario that I just mentioned. He was not allowed to attack the black box of the evidence that they used that showed in their eyes that he had committed these fraudulent acts. In fact, he didn't commit the fraudulent acts. So earlier this month, another attorney and I caused to be filed a claim for $35 million in damages against the University of Connecticut. We intend to proceed with that case and follow it through. So kind of stay tuned for this. This is important because it's not just about Dr. Doss. It's also about resveratrol. And frankly, it's about all alternative healthcare because I think, in my view, they went after Doss so they could get at resveratrol. Resveratrol has so many incredible properties of healing to help you live longer, to help you live a better quality life, to reverse macular degeneration in the eyes, by the way, to help prevent mortal heart attacks. Aspirin doesn't do that. Aspirin only protects against non-mortal heart attacks. But you take the proper amount of resveratrol and it will actually prevent a mortal heart attack. It also seems to stimulate stem cells to develop. And resveratrol protects against the destruction of stem cells at sites where they are needed. So this is the most recent evidence that came out from that seminar that Bill Sardi conducted in Las Vegas. So by attacking Doss, by attacking all his research, it caused a dramatic drop in resveratrol sales, and it caused a decline in people's interest in resveratrol. Coincidence? You tell me. I don't know, but it sure sounds fishy to me. So I would say that if you are interested in health and nutrition, you ignore the mainstream media, that you look to alternative sources of information, such as TNS Radio and some of the others, I would urge you once again to join the National Health Federation. Go to www.thenhf.com. So thenhf.com, thenhf.com. Join us. Sign up on the email list. It's not expensive to join NHF, and we welcome your membership. We also have satellite branches. NHF Ireland exists out of Dublin, Cork, and Dundalk. We have NHF UK, which is now being based out of Edinburgh. We have NHF Belgium, or Benelux, I should rather say, NHF Sweden, NHF Germany, and the like. So if you're in another country, or if you would like to be a representative in another country that I didn't name, let me know. You know, send me an email through TNS Radio or contact me through TNS Radio, and I would welcome your contact. So this has been a mishmash of programs, mainly because I was fixated on my mother's health issues, which are still ongoing, by the way, but she seems to be out of the woods, and some other things that have been going on. But basically, that's taken my mind there in that direction. Next week, we'll have a guest. Don't ask me who it is, because I don't know, but we will have an interesting guest, and I urge you to tune in next Wednesday at 8 p.m. Irish time, or London time, or Londonderry time, or whatever it is, and Cork time. But anyway, stay tuned, and I look forward to you all joining me then. And thanks for bearing with me. This has been a program that I like to do, and I appreciate that you're all there and listening for us. So, all right. You stay tuned, stay healthy. Listen to Sean McGuire next, our lightning man. And I will see you next week, or certainly talk to you next week. Bye, everyone.